This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rise above and be in control with today's business headlines, driven by Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Koo Soo Chung and I'm with Joyce Goh. We are talking about the business news and just a couple of comments on the grill that just happened with the Deputy International Trade Minister YB Ong Kian Ming and Chris Seng of Maybank Etiqa as the Chief Strategy Officer. I guess what is the kind of messages that I took away from that discussion was the fact that it was a necessary budget in reducing the haves and the gap between the haves and the have-nots, Joyce. But with what is also important is that the government is very cognizant of the ratings implications of their actions, and I think they're doing a lot of messaging and discussions with the ratings agencies. I think the International Trade Minister YB Darrell Leaking is going to Singapore with Kian Ming to talk to the Moody's and the S&P's and the Fitch's. I think patience is needed because the mandate is for 5 years, not for six months.
And I think what YB on Kian Ming pointed out was that, you know, this current budget is about transparency, and hopefully, you know, the ratings agencies will take that on board as well.
Yeah, because I think one of the comments that he made was that the agencies tend to fixate a lot on the hard debt numbers without focusing on the larger, wider implications. That is why, I guess, Tony Pua publishes two numbers. One is the direct debt to GDP ratio of about 50-odd%, and the wider number of about 80% or slightly less. That includes contingent liabilities. Okay, so looking at budget 2019, we know that it's about 8% larger than the previous budget. It's about 314 billion ringgits. And it's basically broken down between, in terms of revenue sources, between indirect taxes, other direct taxes, and income taxes.
Yeah, so if you look at income taxes, that's around 127 billion ringgit. And if you break that down even further, you have corporates at 70 billion ringgit, individuals at 35 billion ringgit, petroleum at 18 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so of course, we know that in terms of OPEX, it's just under 260 billion ringgit. Emoluments, which is basically government salaries and civil servants, is 82 billion ringgit. That's a lot. Debt servicing charges are 33 billion ringgit. Retirement charges, 26.5. So it's a legacy issue. And I think there's a lot of institutional reform that is happening with the new government, but it's a process. It takes time.
Well, Chong, even on the operating expenditure, you have subsidies at 22 billion ringgit as well, and supplies and services at 29 billion ringgit. Looking at development expenditure of 54.7 billion ringgit, you have social at 15 billion ringgit, you have economic at 29 billion ringgit.
Okay, so what we have found out from this budget 2019 is the fact that oil and gas revenues are a huge component of the contribution. It's about 31%. Okay, so without the oil prices being where they are, I think at least at $80 per barrel, there was no way budget 2019 could have been funded. And look, I mean, I think Petronas was in the dock for 24 odd billion ringgit in direct dividends, and then they declared a 30 billion ringgit special dividend to allow Pakatan to pay back GST and other income tax refunds, which would then hopefully flow back into the economy via reinvestments or consumption spending.
Well, Chong, you know, this announcement didn't really go down well with ratings agencies, because they're saying that, like Moody's, they're saying that the government's heightened reliance on volatile oil revenues in the short term would contribute to the weakening of the nation's fiscal profile.
Yeah, it's absolutely true, because as we were talking about earlier, I also found out from Chris saying that basically foreign ownership of Malaysian government securities or Malaysian government bonds has been reduced quite a lot in the last few months, in line with the sell-down in emerging market assets. I think right now only about 30-odd% of MGS is owned by foreigners. So what this means and why this matters is because if the global ratings agencies like Moody's, S&P and Fitch downgrade Malaysia's debt ratings, it means higher borrowing costs and it means higher debt service charges. The fact that only in inverted commas, 30% of MGS is owned by foreigners versus the 45-odd% in the past means that, you know, it's less of a concern than previously.
Yeah, also, you know, S&P ratings have said that, you know, heavy reliance on commodity-based revenues presents an additional risk to Malaysia's fiscal accounts in the absence of more structural revenue-raising measures. So if we look at budget 2019, that will also see a wider fiscal deficit in 2018 than what was targeted by the previous government. And ratings agencies have voiced their concerns.
So in fact, you and Putrajaya yesterday, you spoke to YB
Tony
Pua. Samanye, that's right. So you spoke to Tony Pua about this. This is what he had to say.
I think the biggest concern among some of the agencies are our debt levels relative to GDP. And that is a focus area. And the way we focus at it is look at our total debt. That includes other liabilities, commitments, and not just strictly on government issuance. So that's why there's a period of readjustment. And that's why we're publishing two numbers.
We also asked him what he expects the readjustment period to be.
We expect it to be in the region of 3 years before, but you would be able to see the, what do you call it, overall decline in total liabilities in the short term. Because what we have done now is essentially, as you can see, we have taken away all the non-essential projects or non-productive projects. That directly will reduce the future overall liabilities for the country.
So the finance, of course, that was YB Tony Pua, the political secretary to the Minister of Finance, speaking in Semenye, not Putrajaya. Now, of course, we also know that the finance minister, YB Lim Guan Eng, has announced a fiscal deficit of 3.7% of GDP for 2018. That's 90 basis points higher than the 2.8 earlier.
Yeah, Chuang, well, the government has proposed to reduce the deficit over the next few years. They're looking at, for 2019, down to 3.4%. For 2020, they're looking at 3%. And for 2021, they're looking at 2.8%.
So, of course, the path to fiscal parity is ongoing, and really it's incumbent upon Kian Ming and his colleagues to really manage expectations at the Moody's and S&P's of this world.
That's right. You know that Fitch Ratings have said that Malaysia's public debt is high relative to rating peers, and a further increase in debt over the medium term could have a ratings impact, Chuan.
Okay, so let's talk about this property crowdfunding platform. You actually went for this discussion, and it's innovative because it allows first-time home buyers and people who couldn't afford bank loans in the past because they did not have the documentation to now get on the property ladder. And what happens under the scheme is that you or they, the prospective buyer, puts down 20% of the property value, with the rest initially funded by banks, but then latterly to be funded by individual investors.
That's right. So the HPROP has launched this first of its kind property crowdfunding platform dubbed Fund My Home. And to better explain what this platform is, here is Dr. Dong Guiyong, chairman of the H Media Group.
The peer-to-peer allows individuals to become investors to buy and to subscribe for the 80%. The peer-to-peer platform is waiting for SC approval, hopefully very early next year. Meanwhile, what we have started doing is without using the peer-to-peer, i.e. without raising money from the public, the institutions like the banks and other institutions are the one funding today. Eventually, it will become a peer-to-peer platform. It will then be individual investors who will be investing into them.
That was Dr. Tong Guiyong, chairman of the H Media Group, talking about this property crowdfunding platform and the trusted banker stroke developer to come up with the scheme, isn't it? It's quite innovative, right? It ticks all the boxes, right? It ticks the fact that the property buyer can get on the ladder. It also ticks the regulator's boxes in the sense that the risk to the financial system is diversified among the people and the people have a high savings rate. It also means that people among the sector, anybody in Malaysia that wants to be a property investor can invest in this platform with a minimum investment of 5,000 ringgit. So it seems to have a lot more upside than there is downside.
Well, Chuang, currently the participating institutional investors are Maybank and CIMB Group. So for now, it's just institutional investors. They need to wait for necessary approvals, like from the SC, before it can open up to individual investors. At the press conference yesterday, I was there with Keith Kam from the news team, and we asked about safeguards of this initiative, right? What are they looking at? And they're saying that, you know, the risk for banks lending money to the home buyers is low because they say the amount to be borrowed would be very small. So borrowers will likely have sufficient income to pay back their loans.
Yeah, okay. I guess the downside to this whole equation is the fact that property prices don't go up forever, right? We've seen property crashes happen all over the world in recent memory, London, Dubai, Singapore. There's a speculative element to property, and you know, this feeds the speculative further. So I guess from the regulator's perspective, SE, they've got to really examine this and to see whether this works from a policy perspective.
Yes, exactly. So the Minister of Finance was at the event yesterday as well, and YB Lim Guan Eng said that the government will engage with stakeholders like the National House Buyers Association before implementing the peer-to-peer home financing exchange platforms, because the association has expressed disagreement with the crowdfunding scheme, saying that it could encourage more property speculation and bad debts.
Okay, so just in terms of mechanics, you can, if you're the homeowner, can either sell or refinance the property after 5 years. You can even rent it out. And 6 months before the five-year expiry date, a valuation will be done by an independent valuer. And if you choose to sell, the developer is entitled to the first 20% of any price appreciation So everybody kind of makes money, right? The owner makes money, the developer makes money, the investors make money, and the risk is diversified among everybody, so the systemic risk of the system doesn't come into play. It's quite ingenious, and I think that's the basis of how P2P platforms in China is really taken off in China, right?
Yeah, but you have to make sure the safeguards are really in place and nobody can abuse that, I think. Yeah. Looking at the returns on investments, I think investors can expect an annual return fixed at about 5% per year. And looking at, so there's capital gains after 5 years. So, yeah, a lot of potential, but we have to wait. When it comes to peer-to-peer, that's still not launched yet. Or they're looking at 2019, the first quarter of next year.
So, of course, this, you know, if it works, will play into the affordable home scheme. Pakatan has actually promised 1 million houses within a 10-year period. So maybe if it works, who knows, right?
Yeah, Tun M was there yesterday, the Prime Minister launching this scheme, and he said he brought this up about how it ties in with Pakatan's promise to have 1 million affordable homes in the next 10-year period.
Okay, we're going to be coming back in a few minutes with a Markets Watch, so stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Keeping you on track for peak business performance with the new Volvo XC40, the expression of innovation. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.